anywhere you know.
I'm Mark Steiner, and that's Let's Have Some Fun by the Barqués. Entered the charts on this day in 1978. We are joined now in studio by Kelly Murray, who is the Baltimore County 911 operator who received a 2013 Telecommunicator of the Year Award from Baltimore County, and who is the one we were talking about in the last segment with the county executive, who's been targeted by Baltimore County Fraternal Order of Police because of the Facebook post she made regarding police brutality. She's joined here by Dave Von Love, Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, who has taken up this case and cause, and Kelly's husband, Devrick Murray, is also a member of Leaders for Beautiful Struggle and has been a guest on this show numerous times as well. Good to have you both in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Y'all can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook page. It's 410-319-8888. Kelly, good to see you. I mean, sorry to see you in these circumstances, given everything we've gone through. But very quickly, take us back to what happened.
I, you know, hadn't noticed a lot of dispatches and police officers posting things that were in support of the Eric Gardner decision and Mike Brown, the officer that was responsible for killing him, was not indicted. And they were, you know, posting things like, you know, I can breathe because I obey the law, you know, T-shirts that said stuff like that. One dispatcher in particular, who also is a wife of an officer, you know, posted that, you know, she didn't understand why they were rallying in Ferguson in the first place. Why? Who cares about a thug dying in the street? And, you know, and that's why I referenced in my post, you know, in quotes, thug, because, you know, I was responding to her question. And the question that she raised was, you know, officers die in the line of duty all the time and no one's rallying for them. And, you know, I thought about it and it really hurt my feelings. And I think about my son and I think about his safety. I think about my husband all the time when they leave the house. And, you know, I decided to talk about my feelings on my personal Facebook page. And, you know, 2 hours after it was posted, it was obviously screenshot by someone. And over a period of 2 weeks, it had been sent around to several officers in Baltimore County. And out of nowhere, it just completely blew up. And it's one of the most difficult and horrific things.
Are you
that
still
I've
working
well.
As an operator?
I have not been there since December the 22nd.
Because?
I'm fear of my life. The last time that I worked there, I actually received 2 calls from people from other jurisdictions asking, who was I and was I there and did I work there? I've had officers text other dispatchers asking who I was. I've had dispatchers confirm. Absolutely. I have dispatchers who confirmed, you know, yes, she works there and what shift I worked on. You know, I've had officers contact me via Facebook for whatever reason. And, you know, I asked my employer to, you know, do investigation and internal and complaint was initially, you know, turned in by myself on December the 20th before this even hit the media. And as of yet, I have not had any results. I learned yesterday that, in fact, someone did unlawfully run my name and information and, you know, like CJIS, which is something that you only do for criminals.
You mean somebody ran your name through the to find out if you had a...
To get my information, address, license,
you
car
don't know who
information.
That was.
I was told it was from someone in a different agency, but I wasn't able to be... They weren't going to tell me who it was, who was responsible. So, yeah, I don't think they were intending to send me flowers, you know?
Right.
They sent, you know, they have my information, so my entire family is exposed.
But let me, before we turn to Davon, I mean, so... And I tried to ask the county executive this when he was here, if you heard some of that conversation. Has he not been in touch? Has anybody from the county talked to you about the situation, about where you are?
Absolutely no communication.
From nobody?
My supervisor has called me twice since this incident has taken place to ask me how I was doing and to, you know, basically talk about my time being off and how was that going to be covered. But as far as me being supported by this incident, I have not had any support from my supervisors or Baltimore County in general from this. What these officers are doing on Facebook, these posts that they're putting up, these pages that they're putting up, is against the law.
Is these the ones that say fire Kelly Murray?
Yes.
That Facebook page.
It's against the law. It's harassment. I've drawn up several calls and sent officers out on calls for something such as this, being harassed through media. And then for them to unlawfully run my name and my information to get information about me is against the law. And it's being allowed. And, you know, and as far as, you know, Kamenetz is concerned, he wouldn't speak about my history at Baltimore County. I have been an outstanding employee.
You received the award.
I received an award. I've had officers call as I was working high priority events on a channel and ask, who is this dispatcher, and write commendations for me. And I have proof of all of this stuff. I'm an OJT. I'm an on-the-job trainer there. And, you know, I feel like my employer, or at least someone from Baltimore County, could have spoken out and said, you know what, nothing in her career of 8 years shows that she's anti-police, you know, shows that anything that these people are trying to say about me. And it is hypocritical, because if an officer's wife and other officers can post things like this roach, referring to me as
a roach,
it's a racist comment. If they can do this and they're supposed to be protecting and serving the people, how is it that their jobs are not on the line?
Davon Love, good to have you in the studio as well. So, I mean, and this is, as you said to me on the phone over the holiday, and we were off over the holiday, so couldn't get into this issue during that time, and I was also under the weather over the holiday, but you and I talked over the holiday, and you made it clear that LBS, Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, don't usually take on these kind of things, but you decided to, for reasons beyond the fact that Devrick is a member of a group.
Yeah, I mean, a part of the issue—
Who is Kelly's husband.
Right. I mean, part of the issue for us is that, you know, our focus is generally about public policy relating to issues of institutional racism. Our work is centered around issues of police misconduct and criminal justice, and et cetera. And so for me, you know, hearing about what happened to Kelly, you know, it jives really well with the other work that we've done. But one of the things that I wanted to express, you know, in response to many of the things that Executive Kamenetz said, you know, I was really disappointed with many of the comments, given that. And here's the question that I put to someone at the Baltimore County FOP when I talked to them on the phone. I asked, what specifically about Kelly's comment constitutes anti-police sentiment?
Right.
You know, because I think the problem is that we are in a context where law enforcement is not willing to take on criticisms of law enforcement as it relates to issues of police brutality and institutional racism. And one of the things that was told to me over the phone was that, you know, we don't have any problems here in Baltimore County, you know, on these issues. And that was something that, you know, Mr. Kamenetz repeated. And to me, what jumped out at me, one of the things that we worked on last year during the General Assembly was Christopher's Law, a young man, Christopher Brown, who was killed by an off-duty officer in Baltimore County. You know, so for me, the idea that things are okay in Baltimore County, we don't have these problems, flies in the face of many of the experiences that a lot of folks have. And one of the things that I said when I talked to someone on the phone, the FOP, when he made this statement about that, you know, there not being problems, you know, for me, the question I asked is, well, how do you document these problems? You know, how do you record? I explained to him an incident I had in Baltimore County with a law enforcement officer that clearly was profiling me based on, you know, me being a person of African descent. And I talked to the supervisor who called me and tried to express that the situation that happened with me wasn't based on, you know, my ethnicity. But I'm sure that wasn't reported anywhere. And I'm sure lots of people have these issues that aren't reported anywhere. And I think it does a disservice to law enforcement to just deny that institutional racism affects the practices of law enforcement, because what it does is that it creates, and I think the response of law enforcement, the FOP, and even Mr. Kamenetz in his comments, you know, on the segment earlier, I think creates a bigger chasm in the community, because there are lots of people like Kelly who feel the same way. And so they see this response, and what are they going to think? They're going to think, well, these people really are against me, because what Kelly said is how we feel. And their response is to say she should be fired. I mean, it demonstrates the incapacity to take the kind of criticism that will create the kind of relationship with the community that people want to say that they say they want to have.
You know, and Kelly, one of the things I was thinking about as both of you were speaking was, as you were talking earlier, is that This is a moment when it seems to me the political leadership, and when the county executive comes back, I'll ask him about this, and he only had a brief time with us today, or I would have pushed a little further. But there's a difference between being anti-police and realizing that the history of police departments in this country and in our communities here, and that there is a level of racism, both institutional but personal, in police departments that we have to address, mm-hmm. that has to be challenged and spoken to. This, to me, seems to be an opportune time for that to happen.
Right. And see, there's plenty of research that has been done on implicit bias, right? We live in a society where we're socialized to internalize negative criminal images and representations of black people, right? And so there's all this social science data that suggested that is the case. And so my question to law enforcement would be, why would police officers be immune to that? If every arena in civil society is plagued by the issue of institutional racism, then why would the law enforcement agencies not be
obviously, I mean, and on a personal level, though, I mean,
right.
Kelly,
my post was a plea. My post clearly says, "Please don't kill my son." And what you give me back in return is to, I'm going to take your job from you. I'm going to publicly embarrass you. I'm going to put your name and your face all over television. I'm going to make up things about you and lie on you. I'm going to do that to you. And what you're doing is you're pleading with me. Please don't kill my son. And in my post, I say, this in no way discredits what some officers do. How can you take that and turn it into something so ugly? I'm clearly expressing the fear for my son and what's going on out here. If you're not an officer who's guilty of doing things like this, you should absolutely have nothing to say about it. And I'm not asking for anybody to agree with my feelings and my thoughts. That's not what I'm asking for you to do, because I obviously didn't agree with theirs. But it's your right. And why is it that I don't have a right to say what I feel about my child and still have a job that I do well and you can?
You clearly do well from all the commendations you've received on the job and the work you do there. And I looked at the Fire Kelly Murray Facebook page. We did ask the FOP, and we reached out to all the officers by email. We called the FOP Lodge. We've been doing everything we can to be in touch with them to join us on this program, either with you or by themselves, to talk about what this is about, but they have not responded to any of our requests to come on. So we did ask them to join us to be part of this conversation. And I mean, and the fact that what I want to explore a bit more is the fear you're feeling right now, the threat you're feeling to your own personal safety. But we have to take a break, just because we are a radio station. You have to take legal breaks, and this is one we have to take. And we will be right back. And we're on our way to break. We're hearing Mr. Kicks by Eddie Young and Company, bass player, songwriter, composer Eddie Young, born in the state of Chicago in 1936. We'll come right back with Kelly Murray and Dave Unlaw. We're also going to be joined by Zachary Murray, no relation, who is part of the Black Bunch movement. But don't go away. We'll be right back.
To fools that can't resist temptation, step right up. You're next. I hail from a hot old...
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin. On this day in 1924, George Gershwin completed Rhapsody in Blue at the age of 26. Another reason why young people should be listened to. All kinds of young people. We forget the wisdom that resides in youth. So join me. Before we get back to our program, I want to remind you to join me on January the 30th at the Governor Calvert House in Annapolis for the 12th Annual Annapolis Summit, 7 a.m., It's a two-hour program featuring Maryland's political leaders outlining the coming 2015 legislative session. We'll be talking with Governor-elect Larry Hogan, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush. We want you to join us. It's your chance to speak to and question the leaders about where the future of the state is going. For details, go to thedailyrecord.com/Annapolis-summit. That's thedailyrecord.com/Annapolis-summit. Or call Claire Sheehan at 443 443-524-8101. That's 443-524-8101 for ticket information. So you can join us there. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by Stevens University, BG&E, the Maryland State Education Association, and the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, and, of course, WEAA. But join us there on January 30th. It's your chance to question the political leaders of the state of Maryland, our annual Annapolis Summit. We come back to our conversation here in the studio that we began in the last hour. Kelly Murray's here with us, the Baltimore County 911 operator, who received the 2013 Telecommunicator of the Year Award for Baltimore County, who's been targeted by the Baltimore County Fraternal Order of Police because of a Facebook post she made regarding police brutality and what happened after Eric Garner, the man who killed Eric Garner, was exonerated in New York. Davon Love, Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. And we're joined here by Zachary Murray, who is an activist from Oakland, California, organizing the Black Brunch Actions, and Siobhan Henderson, an activist from Baltimore, who's been part of organizing the Black Brunch Actions here in Baltimore. Good to have you both in the studio as well.
Ditto.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You know, log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner, call us at 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation. So before we turn to Zachary Murray, again, no relation, and Siobhan Henderson, I do want to kind of – so where do you go from here? I want to know what is the both political and personal action that you all are contemplating.
Well, I mean, politically, I mean, one of the things that you know, we're thinking about is, you know, really trying to push back against the FOP. We've talked about demanding a public apology in terms of, you know, the things that they've said about her publicly. Also, I think just in terms of what's coming down in the General Assembly, you know, we've talked about the importance of addressing the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights. And I think this situation is just an example of the ways in which law enforcement avoids accountability. You know, in terms of dealing with the issue of police brutality by casting people that make this criticism as anti-police. So a part of what we would hope this can be instructive on the political realm is to demonstrate why we need more accountability for law enforcement. I think for Kelly, you know, on the personal side, one of the things we put up on our website is a GoFundMe just to help and support, you know, given the situation that Kelly is in. You know, we imagine that it would be difficult for her to continue to be employed in Baltimore County, you know, and that's a decision that, you know, Kelly has to make, you know. But I think just in terms of getting more people to support her, if not necessarily just with dollars, but just with words of support, given that there are, you know, there's a Facebook page that you mentioned that has, you know, 3,500 likes of people, you know, making these kind of despicable comments. And so any kind of support.
I was shocked by the number of likes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, thank everybody who has supported me, all of the calls and text messages from other fellow dispatchers that are there. That are
so
still
you are receiving
there.
Some support from people, your fellow workers.
Absolutely. And, you know, they have been told, though, to, you know, basically not say anything publicly. But, you know, obviously they support me. And they are also people who are there who like the post and commented on the post, who feel the same way that I do, who are allowed to keep their job, who hasn't been targeted. So I know that I'm an example, you know. But, you know, they've sent flowers and they've, you know, make sure that I've been okay and talk to me and just, you know, let me know that they had my back, and I do appreciate that, and anybody who has, you know, support for me.
So let me get a call in here, then we turn to our guests here in the studio from the Black Brunch Action Movement, 410-319-8888. Donna in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Welcome, Donna. Thank you.
Always a good show. You know, unless her job has a policy already in place that says that employees cannot make, you know, do some, when they're not working, public statements or comments or whatever, to, you know, threaten to fire her is a civil rights violation. Because you have to have a policy in place first and then educate the employees about what you can and cannot do off hours. Now, she did this as a citizen, not working
right.
In her own private time. So they can't use it against her. So that becomes a civil rights issue as well. And I recommend her to contact the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and some of the, you know, and maybe the EEOC, federal or the local, because, I mean, for them to oh, you know, discriminate against her because she has a political opinion, that's illegal. And right. I don't know where in the civil rights or employment laws that covers, but she has a right as a citizen, not in her job, but as a citizen, her own time in her own house, right. to make opinions, just like if she wrote an editorial for the newspaper. Would they fire her for that because she wrote an editorial about a personal comment? So I wanted your guests to talk about it, and we really need to embrace this young lady because it was not a violation of her employment policies in her job. She stated an opinion, and that's and I think what our constitutional rights to your opinion. What is it titled? What is it in the Constitution?
Right, your right to free speech, and I think Donna has, and I think that probably the idea of going to the Committee for Civil Rights or the ACLU or finding other attorneys to take this case is probably another good political tactic because you have to be defended and you should be allowed to go back to your work.
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely am looking for, you know, some help in that area. There's not a lot I can talk about regarding that right now, but
you should know. Can't jeopardize anything at the moment. But we're going to continue this, and we're going to be continuing here on the Mark Steiner Show to bring Kelly back and keep this alive and kind of wrapping our media arms around her in this situation because justice has to be served in our communities, and if you just can't. And it's being ignored by the media. And the other thing being ignored by the media, it seems, except in a very negative response, has been the Black Brunch movement. I mean, I'm just shocked about this. Zachary Murray, activist from Oakland, who's organizing Black Brunch, is with us as well. And Siobhan Henderson from Baltimore, who's been organizing the Black Brunch actions here in Baltimore. We're going to turn to them right now. And then for the other guests are staying, and we're going to combine these conversations in a few minutes about where we're all going with all this stuff. It's good to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So, talk a bit about what the Black Brunch movement has been and this organizing you've been doing, Zach.
So, Black Brunch originated in Oakland, California, and it was basically rooted in our outrage at some of the protests that had been happening. Many of us had been out in the streets from the point of the Michael Brown decision, from the Eric Garner decision. My roommate, Wazzy Davis, literally saw a megaphone, being stripped out of the hands of a Black woman so that other folks could take control of the protests. And it was an environment.
What do you mean? Stripped? What
is that? Like she was speaking, and the microphone was taken out of her hands.
By authorities or by
a white male, and who then directed the march to move on. You know what I mean?
Because there's
been a lot of control over that protest, and a lot of times we felt the people who are literally walking around with police targets on their back, right, were not represented in these protests, and so we wanted to create something that was more reflective of the Black community, that was more responsive. And that really took this protest to the folks that we thought needed to see it. And so from there, we decided to gather as Black people and to go into predominantly white spaces to carry the weight of our pain to people and to communities who don't have to think about it. So in Oakland, we targeted Rock Ridge, which is a very affluent residential community in the city, sort of comparable to maybe Roland Park. And we went to several businesses and read the names of our brothers and sisters who are passing away, chanted and sang the song, Which Side Are You On? The main point there was to expose folks who were not thinking about this, but also to disrupt business as usual, right? Because we cannot accept a reality in which every 28 hours a Black person is being murdered by the police. These are men, women, and children, and they're innocent, you know what I mean? And they're not getting justice in this system. And so we're disrupting business, and we're letting folks know that we're not going to accept this anymore, and we're not going to allow you to either.
So, Siobhan, how are you disrupting business as usual? What form is it taking place? Because, again, this is not something that the press is covering in any great depth other than to say that, you know, you are disrupting people's breakfast.
Yes. They've been saying very mean and ridiculous things. So what we pretty much do is we get together and we go into different establishments. Two weeks ago, we went to the Hamden area. Well, we started in Towson, and then we ended up in Hamden, and we went to many different restaurants.
What do you do? What happens when you have these?
Literally, we're singing our chant as we enter the establishment. We go in, we disperse, and throughout the entire restaurant, and we do what we call
reading the names.
Well, not just reading the names. We have a saying. We start off by saying every 28 hours a Black person in America dies. And it, goes a little further. And we say we honor their lives each day, every day. And then we read off 25 names and their ages. which I think kind of puts things into perspective because everyone that we read is usually under the age of 45, and that's kind of in as young as 7 years old.
So, you know, one of the things here, someone just chatting that they've been a lot of dialogue in some of the liberal portions of the white community. And so lots of people have been questioning why is Black Brunch targeting white liberal neighborhoods instead of conservative white neighborhoods?
Well, that's not our place. We want white liberals to target conservative white neighborhoods, right?
Exactly.
And I would love to see busloads of white people going to the South, going to Missouri, going to these communities. That's not our position. That's not our place. We literally have people for this nonviolent action pointing guns at us, you know, in social media. And so it's not our place. We want white allies to respond to black leadership, to follow black leadership. And that's part of what Black Brunch represents, right, is to support our what we're doing. But also the reality is that white liberals are not all the time behind the cause to the extent that they should be. And you know, we need to begin to address that as well. Like, the police are killing us. We're not getting justice. And it's the Democrats as much as the Republicans who are responsible for that.
What did you mean pointing guns online?
So a former New York NYPD officer literally, while we were doing Black Brunch in New York City this past Sunday, went to social media pointing a gun directly into the camera with the hashtag #BlackBrunchNYC. CNN then gave him 8 minutes of airtime, right, where he was allowed to cast himself as the victim. If it weren't for the New York Times columnist Charles Blow, there would have been no kind of accountability, no kind of exposure to the fact that this man was lying. They allowed him to cast himself as a victim, to accuse us of committing hate crimes, and to suggest that we were not in line with the sit-in movement of the 1960s.
Nor did they ask anyone affiliated with Black Brunch to participate in that conversation.
You've really been frozen out of the media.
Well, you know, from New York City went viral because it's, you know, millions of people. We targeted the Upper East Side, which is the elite of the elite. And so there's been LA Times, Washington Post, as far as BBC. There's been some coverage, but it hasn't been the depth that we'd obviously like, you know. And from the jump in Oakland, we had small media coverage. We had a couple of folks. But, yeah, it hasn't been as exposed. People, I think, would much rather focus on the violence, focus on the you know, attempting to say that people are cop killers and things like that, than on the positivity of this movement.
I mean, and your response in Baltimore has been, since we're broadcasting from Baltimore here, has been varied and different. I understood that in some places in the Hamden, which is a mostly white neighborhood, vast majority white neighborhood, with a lot of kind of upscale restaurants, that people actually applauded and stood up and supported in some places.
Surprisingly, we had a very, very warm reception, which was more than we expected to have. Obviously, there were people who showed their indifference, who showed their annoyance, you know, that they weren't happy that we were there. They wanted to enjoy their brunch. But then there were other people, especially people of color and non-people of color, who were employees at these establishments, who would turn the TV down, who would clap with us, who would stand in solidarity. And that was really, really powerful. I think we went through the entire process and we stopped the last place that we went to, which coincidentally used to be a KKK meeting place. It is a restaurant.
Which one was that?
Rocket to Venus.
That's right. But let me just take a quick digression. You grew up in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. I did not. I grew up near D.C.
Okay. Well, so Hamden, the neighborhood, was a neighborhood that if you were black or Jewish even in Baltimore, you knew when I was coming up you didn't go to. If you crossed that threshold, it was a nuck. Yep. You're going to have to fight. And it is where the Baltimore Klan's headquarters were in, as you were just saying, mm-hmm. in Hamden.
Yeah, so the manager, she, you know, made it her point to speak to someone and let us know that this was really moving, this was really important and powerful because of what that establishment used to be. And it was, you know, even though that was the biggest reception we got, like people clapping and everything, there was still one employee there who's a heckler who wanted to, you know, provoke and make us feel whatever it is society wants us to feel by doing these peaceful protests. And he didn't win, obviously.
And I think this is kind of a very brilliant approach to the protests that are going on. I mean, what you're doing is going in these restaurants and establishments. I remember seeing a video some months back out of Ferguson, mm-hmm. where that black and white activists went to the symphony in St. Louis and stood up saying Black Lives Matter,
mm-hmm.
and watching the reaction of the audience, where the majority of people were like, sitting very stiff and didn't say a word. And
yeah, no one knows what to do.
But some stood up and were applauding and kind of getting into it. It was
That was absolutely an influence behind what we did. We literally borrowed the song "Which Side Are You On" from what we saw in that video.
Right.
We adjusted the lyrics a little bit to be relevant for what we're doing. But that was definitely an influence. Was to again try to get affluent people who aren't thinking about this, who definitely benefit from police protection, right? To begin to feel what we're feeling.
And what did you say?
Some people just simply do not know what to do, or they're afraid to react, even if they have humility, even if they understand, I mean, not humility, even if they understand what's going on in our cause and what we're trying to say, they fear standing up and being the representative of, I guess, the white population. Because if I stand up, if I'm a white person and I stand up, then I'm speaking on behalf of all white people when I do it. It's almost the way that they kind of feel and shy away from standing up to say anything or to even stand in solidarity.
I mean, I think this is a kind of a very creative, powerful way to respond to this. And the idea of going into upscale restaurants in mostly white neighborhoods is it's shocking, but I think it's a good shocking. Mm-hmm. That's happening. I mean, your reception in Towson, they actually called the police.
Yes, they did.
Right?
Yeah. We targeted Trader Joe's, Barnes & Noble, and Nando's Peri Peri, which are all chain establishments. So we knew going in that we wouldn't have much time, that they, you know, could use their national store policy to say that we're trespassing.
Right.
Yes.
But what was more important was actually what the things that the manager said. We had white allies because we kind of felt that Baltimore might be a bit of an unsafe space. And literally, as soon as we started, we had a heckler. So it came in use to have white allies there. But we also had them as store liaisons. And at one point, the manager of Barnes & Noble said that we're losing everything that we got, that, you know, basically because what we're doing, we're disrespecting and, you know, we're not going to be effective. You know what I mean? And it was more important to her that she felt respected, that, you know, for the 5 minutes that we were in her business, than to realize the fact that black people are literally losing family every 28 hours.
Yeah. You know? I think the most profound thing for me throughout that whole experience was actually going into the Barnes & Nobles and that same manager saying to our allies, our white allies, that, you know, you let them do this. I asked you.
You let them do this.
You let them do this. And, I mean, I had to go back to the white ally and say, you know, how do you feel being told that you could control all of us black people, and you let us do it, you know? And I don't think in that moment he fully understood, like, the depth of what that statement felt like to me or to any other person of color or what that even says about, you know, this race of people, like, the way that they really view us. Like, you white man, you my fellow brethren, you let them black people come in here, is what she said. And that was kind of the craziest thing to me. It's the one thing I probably took away from the whole experience. Like, that is generally probably the view of, I mean, not every white person, but the...
No, that's it. I mean, it's a lot of people in America who are not black believe that this notion of living in a post-racial society, that's where we are.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that's happened in these movements that have occurred, and both the struggles we've been talking about in the last half an hour on this program, is that something new is bubbling up in America, driven by your generation. Then it's driven a wedge. Wedge is not the word I want to use. It has opened up the sores and wounds of this country that have been kind of had the kind of time has drifted over them, so they're covered and people weren't feeling them, but now people are beginning to feel them again and having to address things like institutional racism, address things like what the history of this country is about, and what we talked about in the program yesterday, which was on Monday in our Philosopher's Roundtable, is that when you talk about Martin Luther King talking about I've made integration happen, but I'm looking now at a burning house. And that burning house is capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And the burning house is the capitalism that was built on the bones of slavery. It wouldn't exist without it. Those contradictions are coming to the fore for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I think you all are at the apex of that movement, expanding kind of the contradictions and, I think, opening the consciousness of America at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I guess what surprises me through exposing all of this is that the response even that we received on Twitter, I mean, there's been so many people even tweeting me just to say crazy things because I've hashtagged Black Brunch. is that, you know, when you get when we can explain what this is all about, when you think about what we're trying to do, what kind of message we're trying to give our society and people who are being protected by the police and like not understanding our plights, to be to get the response that we think brunch is racism. I mean, it's racist. It's
that like black brunch is racist.
Yeah, black.
Right?
You know, brunch is racist. Bacon is racist. Like, why are you doing this? This is ridiculous. Kind of. It's like, are you paying attention? Are you listening? Why are you so offended? Why are you so affected by what we're trying to do? What is making you carry this negative emotion with what we're trying to say? Or why are you trying to negate our truths? And Yeah,
and I think that to me, this is, and Tim O'Kelly, what you've been going through. This is like as we said, from the '60s, the political is personal, and the personal is political.
Mm-hmm.
And
I find that very, very interesting,
right?
Because that is exactly what this is all about, in my opinion. You know, the officers who posted their support for this decision for Mike Brown, and you know. They supported the fact that, you know, this man was killed by an officer, and they're wearing T-shirts that say "I can breathe because I obey the law." They support this, and they're able to express that on social media without any backlash. However, when I do it, mm-hmm. it's a problem. And for the people of color who have made comments to me, like, well, that's what you get when you say things like that. Well, you know you shouldn't. And I can't believe that they actually believe that they should be silenced.
It's conditioning.
They believe that. It's so disheartening. It's so frustrating.
So it's like so many issues really kind of in this one pot of issues.
Yes.
It's like us reprogramming ourselves, us trying to get people, white people, to understand what this is, us trying to change legislation, us trying to, you know, so mm-hmm. many things that it kind of all gets convoluted, and then people are like, you know, what's more important? Is not one is more important than the other. I think they all kind of need to help happen collectively mm-hmm. and at the same time. So it's difficult.
We have to take a very, very, very brief break, and we are going to come right back to continue this conversation. On our way out of here, on our way to this break, I should say, we're hearing Short Fat Fanny by Larry Williams in 1980. The great R&B star Larry Williams was found dead in his L.A. home, and he was only 44 years old. We'll come right back to this conversation. And we got a text from Kamenetz's office who are listening to this program, and I'll read that as soon as I come back about Kelly's job. We'll be right back.
I told her that I loved her, I never leave. She put her arm around me, gave me fever. She's my tootie booty, I love the child so.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Schubert's Ave Maria, as performed by Marian Anderson. 60 years ago today, Marian Anderson became the first African-American soloist to sing at the New York Metropolitan Opera. She was in her late 50s when she appeared in January 7th, 1955, in Verdi's Un ballo es Masera. And so we honor her today on this program. And we are here with you at 410-319-8888. We see the calls coming in. We're going to get to those calls. We are here with Zachary Murray, activist from Oakland, who is one of the organizers for the Black Brunch Actions, in the studio with us, along with Siobhan Henderson, who is also part of Black Brunch Actions here in Baltimore and participated in those actions. We are also joined, continuing in the studio, is Kelly Murray, who is a 911 operator who was attacked, not physically, but attacked on Facebook and other places because of how she responded to the lack of conviction in the Eric Garner case and other things she talked about. Yvonne Love, Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, 410-319-8888. So we just got an email from Don Moeller, who was here with Kevin Kamenetz. He's his chief of staff. It said, quoting, "Kelly's job is not in jeopardy in Baltimore County. Her supervisors have made it clear to her that she may return to work as soon as she'd like." And this is from the Baltimore County Executive's offices, who've been listening to the segment, and then what she was saying is directly connects to Kelly's situation and the irony there. So that just came in from the office, but and we can talk about that if you like. You want to respond to that? You can. but you don't have to. But you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. Let's get back to the phones, have people get this conversation moving here with our guests. And Mr. E, from somewhere in Maryland, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for accepting my call.
Thanks for calling.
And I appreciate what's being done with the Black Brunch. But my question is this, and there's also the freedom of speech and to also protest. But is it a public place that he's going into, or is it a private owned business?
Can we get Zach Lennox, folks? Come on.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, okay. Privately owned businesses. And, you know, our goal is, you know, we could do protests out in public, right? But our goal is really to disrupt business as usual, you know, to get in there and let folks know that no one can accept this. And the best way to do that is to get in people's faces in a business, not, you know, aggressively, but just to be there inside.
And let me just say, also in response to that, I mean, that's people ask that question when those of us of my generation were sitting in and on buses and freedom rides and standing in private businesses that were segregated. I mean, it's no different in the sense that, that's where you congregate. We have a right to be there to have our voices heard. And that's just a response to whether or not, you know, I wouldn't get – whether it's private or public.
Yeah, and we absolutely draw from that history, that legacy. The reality is that folks didn't get a seat at the table, the lunch counter, by just asking for it. And we're not going to get the police to stop killing us by just asking for it. You have to do more. We have to really push the point.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Wanda in Baltimore County. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Wanda.
I just want to comment on the 911 operator. I was on hold when you had the gentleman, the executive person.
Yes, I'm sorry we couldn't get to you.
I wasn't able to get through. However, I just want to send her my prayers, and I know she prays about this thing. God is, whenever God is in the midst of anything, it's going to always work out for the good. So I know that things are going to be okay, and keep your head up, and you have my support. I just want to share with you now, I've only been in Maryland about a year. I'm from Virginia, and I like it since I've been here. I've had a lot of problems. I currently have a son who's missing. I just recently posted something on Facebook just earlier this week. That was my first time doing it because I really never believed in that type of stuff. I'm somewhat of a private person. I just never felt like, you know, but I know I need some help. He was an engineering major in college, and there's just been a lot going on. Mm-hmm. I have another son who's currently incarcerated in Virginia, and he's just 24, and he was also a college student. I haven't had contact with either one of them in quite a while. There's a lot going on with the phone systems, I don't know, but anyway, I recently lost my sight. I moved here, kind of stepped out on faith. I don't know anyone here, but my point is, I was on the bus some weeks ago, and I originally caught mobility out to the Essex area. And since I had to wait almost 2 hours for a return trip, I decided to catch the bus. And as I was walking and trying to find the bus stop, I was told which direction to go. A police officer pulled up. He asked me, did I need any help? Was I lost or whatever? I told him where I was trying to find the bus stop. I was told it was straight on, you know, around the corner,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
And he said, well, I was trying to stop you, you know, where you're going. But I have a long white cane that I use that helps me to, you know, pretty much guide me as I'm walking. And he said, well, can I give you a lift or whatever? I said, well, no, just direct me to the bus stop. He said, where's the one you're going to, where they told you about? It's not a subtle thing for you to sit at. He said, there's one by Royal Farms where you can sit down. He said, I can take you up there if you like. I said, well.
Well, Wanda, we only have a short amount of time in this segment, so I politely kind of ask you to kind of get to the point of the story, because we have to get to other callers, and we only have like 10 more minutes in this segment.
Right. Well, I got in the car. He gave me a ride to the Royal Farms, and I felt a little uncomfortable doing it, but as I got out, the gentleman just standing outside the store, and I asked him, you know, how do I get into the store? He said he didn't know. People were at the bus stop. I asked them, when was the bus coming? They were very evasive. They saw me get out of the police car. They didn't want to engage with me. They didn't want to talk with me. I felt that, And I thought, you know, well, you know, maybe that wasn't a good idea because I didn't know what, you know, I'd never been in that area of town.
Right.
And I just wanted to say that in response to the gentleman that was there, the executive from Baltimore County. I don't feel that the people responded that way to the officers here. They somewhat very distant, you know, is what I've, you know, gathered
right.
since I've been here. And I pray that things will, you know, get to the point where people feel comfortable and they have trust in the officers because there's a lot going on that doesn't get out in the news.
Right.
And we need to come together and we need to pray more than anything. And
Wanda, again, appreciate you being part of the program. Thank you so much for sharing. But I'm curious before we go back to the phones, to Eric on the west side, be the next caller up. What I mean, for the four of you at this table at this moment, different organizations, different issues and struggles, but really crossing some lines here and very connected. Can we talk about this connection for a moment?
Well, I think what's beautiful is that there's a diversity of different things happening. I think sometimes right. there's a tendency for folks to think, oh, you got to do what I'm doing or you're not really down.
Exactly.
Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, you gotta be protest. You got to do policy. You're not doing it. You know, there are all these different. And I think what's beautiful is that a lot of us that are doing this work are doing it in whatever lane that we occupy. But we're doing it in a way that reinforces what other folks are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the beautiful thing. That I wish the media would report more on, which is the diversity of what's happening, you know, in terms of the efforts that people are leading. And if you think about just the media context that we're in, you know, we're in a media context that has no historical reference for the kinds of things that folks are talking about. You know, and so I think we're in a context where reporters, media organizations, particularly corporate media, Baltimore Sun, are limited because they don't have any context to interpret something like Black Brunch right. outside of just a bunch of people trying to make noise. They don't understand the historical precedent for that. You know, they don't understand the importance of public policy, right, and the historical legacy around organizing efforts, helping to bolster some of the public policy efforts and how that was connected to grassroots organizing. It wasn't a top-down king mm-hmm. and the Big Six came down and passed mm-hmm. the Civil Rights Act, but it was, you know, grassroots efforts that pushed these things to be imminent right. in you know, in terms of legislation, and that the Big Six were put there, you know, by the powers to be in order to consolidate the power, the grassroots had developed. And those are the kinds of things that I think for those who are listening, I think is important to take away from this conversation. It's just the diversity of efforts and the breadth of what folks are working on.
And that they're all equally effective.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all equally effective. So where does Black Brunch go from here, very quickly, before we have to go to break?
Well, we're clear to everyone that Black Brunch is just a tactic. It's not who we are. It's what we're doing right now. But we've done a lot of different efforts. In Oakland, just a few weeks ago, we shut down the police station for 4.5 hours. We had allies chain themselves literally to all the entrances. We had people chaining themselves at the intersections of the streets to block access to the police station. And we were effective. We completely caught the police off guard. And it was one of the biggest trending items in social media that day. And so, you know, we are right now trying to mobilize nationally. That's the main effort. But to get people, you know, when people do the Black Brunch, they start off kind of nervous, not knowing what it is. But by the end, there's a lot of cohesion, right? So we see that in action, people are coming together. You know, we don't all have the same ideology, but the action kind of unifies us.
Well, to me, this has been a very important conversation for us to have here on the air with everybody. And I want to continue these conversations and look forward to following where Black Brunch is going, both locally and nationally. And we clearly will be staying on top of Kelly Murray's story and what's happening there with her struggle. And we'll continue having to go back and look and talk and do what we can also to be the bridge here for that as well with Baltimore County. I want to thank Kelly Murray for both her courage and for standing up and being in the studio. Good to see you, Kelly. I'm sorry
thank
I have to see
me.
You like this, but it's
yeah.
good to see you in the studio here. Dave Unlove from Leaders of Beautiful Struggle, always an honor to have you in the studio. Thank you for
Thanks
joining
for
us
having
once again.
Me, as always.
Great to meet Siobhan Henderson, who is one of the leaders here in Baltimore of Black Branch Actions, Brunch, excuse me, Actions, and having her in the studio and Zachary Murray, who's on his way back to Oakland, where he continues to struggle out on the West Coast. Good to have the four of you with us.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you so much.
Reminding you on our way to break here that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. www.thebackalley.com. And we are going to break here with Head Over Heels by the Go-Go's. The lead guitarist and bassist, Kathy Valentine. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're going to talk about City Paper and what's in this issue.
Just